Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Bailey Bryant with Home Healthcare News. For this episode of the podcast, we sat down with Beata Home Healthcare CEO David Beata. But before we jump into that conversation, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase. The company's powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. That way, you can spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to your patients. Visit hchb.com for more information. Now back to Beata. As for the company, it's a billion-dollar organization recently turned nonprofit, which provides in-home healthcare and support services across 10 specialty practice areas. As for the man, he's been CEO of the company his father started back in 1975 for the past 2 years now. As the industry continues to change, he's eyeing new ways to do and pay for what the company does best. That means leaning into managed care, dual eligible populations, and technology, just to name a few examples. Not to mention making sure home-based care has a voice in Washington. Here's what Beata had to say about all that and more. David, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to get started with a burning question that I've always had about your company. Obviously, it comes from your family's last name, but you actually spell that B-A-I-A-D-A, while the company name is spelled B-A-Y-A-D-A. There's got to be a story there. Tell me how Beata came to be.
You know, it's all about phonetics. We've got a lot of vowels in our last name. And as you can imagine, I've heard every permutation of pronunciation and spelling. And actually, the original inspiration when we created the name in the early 80s, 1982, was based on some other families that have had similar challenges with spelling and pronunciation and changed the names of their businesses. Some good examples that people may or may not know about: H&R Block was started by the Block family, but it was B-L-O-C-H, and they changed it to B-L-O-C-K to be a little more phonetic, as well as Bic Pen, B-I-C. It's actually the Bic family, B-I-C-H. And so again, another example of changing the spelling of the business to make it easier to spell and pronounce. So hopefully the burning question is solved.
Yes. And now that we've tackled the hard stuff, let's talk about your recent partnership with AmeriHealth Caritas. That news came out in March. Since then, can you share any results or how it's going?
Our partnership with AmeriHealth Caritas is a really, really important relationship to us. They're an organization that we've worked with for a very long time. Our collaboration and the value-based partnership that we established recently and seen in the news, it's a little early to tell and share results, but we had a pretty good feel for the levers included in this value-based arrangement because of our history with AmeriHealth Caritas. And so we're really excited about it. We think that it really highlights the diverse business mix that we have, our ability to take care of a large and diverse population across multiple managed care products and populations. So we're excited about it and looking forward to being able to share results in the future.
Definitely. And this isn't your only managed care relationship. You've entered into several agreements in the past few years. Why has this been an area of focus for you guys?
I think I would start with the fact that it's important to our patients. You know, our patients really just want a reliable, high quality, and compassionate service. They want to be cared for at home. They want to remain safe and independent in the place they prefer most. And these types of partnerships with managed care are really about creating alignment around how best to do that and bringing together reimbursement and clinical practice, quality outcomes, communication, care coordination to do what's right for our patients, rather than us being in different silos and different segments of the system.
I know one area of focus for AmeriHealth Caritas is dual eligibles. CMS recently announced plans to expand coverage for that population. Can you share your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics and favorite themes in the work that we do and in the healthcare industry more broadly. You know, we're really passionate about the dual eligible population, really the elderly poor, if you will, because in many ways, it's really a population that we are uniquely focused on and have been for 40 years. Our services are a little more diverse often than some of the other organizations in our industry, you know, whether it's a Medicaid-funded personal care and support service, a home-based delivery and med management pharmacy, a skilled home health, Medicare-funded home health, nursing and therapy intervention. All of these services are different types of services that are provided to the same dually eligible patient. And so as CMS begins to figure out how to create constructs for these patients to get the right services at the right time at home to help them stay safe and independent, to get the best outcomes at the lowest cost, it kind of really highlights our unique service mix and our ability to organize and orchestrate services inside the home of the dually eligible member. And this is something we've been doing for 40 years, and it's great to have regulatory and reimbursement constructs that recognize, reward, and highlight those capabilities.
Definitely. On top of that, CMS continues to give Medicare Advantage plans more freedom. In 2020, they'll be able to cover benefits that, quote, have a reasonable expectation of improving or maintaining the health or overall function of beneficiaries with chronic conditions. Does Bayada plan on taking advantage of any of those opportunities?
I think the answer is clearly yes, but this isn't a new focus for us. We've been deeply engaged with the Medicare Advantage plan sort of industry for a really long time. We're the largest provider of insurance-funded home care in the country, and inside home health, specifically Medicare-certified home health, we're probably at least one of the largest providers of Medicare Advantage services in the home. And we've really worked hard to ensure that we work with the entire reimbursement landscape in the communities that we commit to. And so, you know, CMS is highlighting of the importance of home-based care inside the Medicare Advantage construct that you described, I think is really exciting. I think it's really just the beginning. We see a lot of exciting things happening with our MA plan partners, but it's early, and we're excited to be a part of collaboratively designing how this will shape over time.
What's your hope for the future on that front?
I think, you know, clearly Medicare Advantage is growing and is projected to keep growing. I think our hope for the future would be to see continued momentum and success in how these plans think strategically about organizations like Bayada, but really all of the organizations, both in the home health industry and other community-based care delivery industries. And our ability to get inside the home, build a relationship of trust and connectedness and compassion with patients and families. And because of those ingredients, being inside their house and understanding their life, we have an incredible ability to make a difference, to create great experiences, to get great outcomes, to do it all at a lower cost to the system overall. And so our hope would be that Medicare Advantage continues to, as they've begun to, continues to recognize the importance of those capabilities and build them into their thinking and strategic priorities around how to design benefits and achieve great results for their members.
Some big news for you guys last year was the $20 million Bayada gave to more than 28,000 employees. Obviously, that was a gift, but I'm curious if the company has seen any benefits from that.
That's an interesting question. I think, you know, my immediate reflection is that we haven't really looked at what benefits may have, you know, come to Bayada. I think our focus has really been on the gratitude and the expression of compassion, admiration, and thanks to our employees who work so hard every single day. This is really about them more than it was about us, if you will. And I think, you know, I was deeply, as you can imagine, engaged in personal connections through that process. And it's been incredibly rewarding to be able to express gratitude in that way and to feel a deeper sense of connection to the people who every day are outside in the home taking care of others and have committed their life really to this really noble profession. And I think in that regard, I feel like, you know, it's been really rewarding to be able to give that gratitude.
Yeah, it's a hard profession to be in. All the time we're talking about the caregiver shortage. I'm interested in how that's affecting you guys and how you go about recruiting and retaining employees.
Yeah, I think for us, the headline is really our entire strategy across all of our different business lines, or what we call specialty practices, is really anchored in talent and culture. You know, we, as I alluded to, you know, just a minute ago, we really believe that nurses, home health aides, therapists, social workers, clinicians overall that we employ have really self-selected into this profession. There's something in their heart that has led them to this profession and desire to care for others. And our strategy, our responsibility, our role, the way we think about our day-to-day work is really to create an environment where they feel like we are empowering them. We're giving them the opportunity to practice their craft, to lean into this profession and be fulfilled in doing their life's work, what they chose to do with their life. And then we recognize and celebrate and really connect with them in doing it, and give them the tools and the training and the development. And so all that comes together in really what I hope is best-in-class, differentiated culture, an environment that they want to be a part of, an organization that they want to associate themselves with to practice their craft, and in turn attracts the very best people. And that's how we think about workforce, and really it's how we think about our business overall, because our people is our product. It's all we are, and it's the most important thing we do every day.
Yeah, definitely challenging, but very important, especially given that that's really the crux of your business, having good caregivers. So I'm curious, sounds like you guys have a good plan for handling that. What are the biggest challenges you're facing at Bayada?
Well, clearly outside of the realm of attracting, retaining, engaging, you know, great people, I think there's probably the next sort of in line in terms of challenges and obstacles that we face is really helping lawmakers, state level, federal level lawmakers, truly understand the value of the work that we do and the impact that a home health aide, a nurse, a social worker, a therapist can make on the life of a patient and really ultimately on the system overall. I think this is something that's improving. There's momentum building. There's incredible support that continues to develop in Washington and in the state capitals. But it's a big challenge for us in how we build grassroots advocacy to educate and teach lawmakers about what we do and give them a conduit to understand their constituent needs for care in the home is a challenge that we deal with every day.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we have probably the largest grassroots and advocacy programs in the industry. We've invested really a lot of time, energy, and money over the last 10, 15, 20 years to help educate lawmakers. It's at the state and federal level. We collaborate with other industry consortiums and associations, many of which, you know, you've written about in the past. And, you know, I think we also do a lot of work with our employees and our clients, right? We have a, you know, 28,000 plus workforce. We take care of 150,000 people a year. These are people who are just as passionate about this as I am. And we try and create ways to give them a voice with their lawmakers in where they live to help build the story and make a difference.
What are the biggest changes you'd like to see at the state level or at the federal level? What do you think really needs to happen to make sure that home-based care is being used as it should be?
I think there's a lot of diverse answers to that. Every market is a little bit different. I would point to some of the positive things that are happening already, some of which we alluded to earlier around, you know, recognition of the importance of services in the home and how they can contribute to better outcomes, and the evolution of benefits design and regulation to an adequate reimbursement to make that possible. And, you know, all of those come together, the design of the benefit, the regulation and kind of the construct, and then the reimbursement, they're all really important because ultimately we are trying to figure out how to attract the very best people and empower them to do great work in the home. And in order to do that, we need to be able to pay them adequately. We need to be able to pay them at market rates or above. We need to be able to simplify the work so that they can practice their craft. They can take the skills that they've developed as a caregiver and apply them in a way that's safe, high quality, but without the shackles of unnecessary regulation, et cetera. And we need to really give them the tools and create benefits that allow them the flexibility for clinical decision-making and how best to help this family. And we see a lot of that happening already, whether it's at the government level, at the health plan level. A lot of things are happening and a lot of attention is being placed into this area, and we're excited about it.
Yeah. Lately, we've seen some legislators really standing up to fight the behavioral assumptions of PDGM. What do you make of that?
I think it's a great start. I love how some of the champions in Washington, lawmakers in Washington, are really leaning into the issue. I think they're proactively partnering with our industry and with their constituents to understand the implications of these regulatory and reimbursement changes to ensure that they're, you know, figuring out how best to get it right. And I applaud them. I think it's great.
Now, we can't get through the podcast without really diving into PDGM. How are you guys preparing at Mayotta?
I think we think about PDGM, obviously there's technical components, how we adapt to the dynamics of reimbursement and regulatory change. And this is a massive change. But like any change, you know, all change is hard. And I would point back to culture. You know, we think about this as a change management exercise as much as a clinical and regulatory or reimbursement change. This is really about culture. How do you clarify the why? How do you help our clinicians, our managers, our leaders tune into and be able to articulate why we are changing, how this connects to our vision for the future, how we design and evolve our approach to care delivery, and then how we teach and invest and train and support them through all this change. This is a change management exercise above all when we think about the future.
Yeah. Now, speaking of change, you guys have been going through a big change. You've recently transitioned to the nonprofit model. Talk about how that transition has been going.
Yeah, obviously, it's something we're really excited about, something we've been working on for a long time. You know, our transition from a founder-led for-profit started by my dad 43 years ago to a nonprofit that just this past January was really all about creating, I would say, an ownership and governance structure that maximizes the likelihood of long-term sustainability. And it is really that simple. Our vision, which we express through what we call the Bayada Way, is that Bayada is here in 100 years or more, that we have the highest quality teams, that we're available in communities all across the world, you know, beyond the five countries where we are today, to really help people get amazing care at home, the place that they prefer. And so rather than sell the business, we decided as a family, you know, Mark, my dad, decided as an owner, to put purpose over payout. And we converted the business to nonprofit to really help ensure that we do our part to help make the Bayada Way come true. And I think it's going great. You know, we've always been this mission-centric, value-centered company. And, you know, it's been really rewarding to be able to express that through our legal and governance structure. And now, you know, we're really the largest nonprofit home care provider in the country, and gives us what I also think is a platform to help engage people that want to be a part of it. I mean, ultimately, again, tying this all back to talent and culture, I really believe that our vision, our desire for long sustainability and success, and is something that gets people excited and like-minded people want to be a part of. And I've already begun to see, you know, the energy that we've been able to create by being able to express this overtly through our nonprofit ownership and governance structure.
What are we going to see in the future from you guys?
I think you're going to see hopefully what you see today, which is a purpose-driven entrepreneurial organization that's committed to delivering great services, great experiences with empathy and compassion, and is also committed to adaptation and continuous improvement to ensure we're here in 100 years delivering more care to more people in more places.
Yeah. We've talked a lot about the challenges and the changes to the industry PDGM, Medicare Advantage, the caregiver shortage. I want to hear about some of the opportunities you see in today's home-based care landscape.
I think we certainly see opportunity in classic areas like technology, like innovation, you know, care delivery innovation, things like telemedicine, remote management, et cetera. I like to bring all these things together with common threads, you know, and I'm very technological, I'd say. So that's a place that I spend a lot of time thinking about. I spend a lot of time on relationships, strategic alignment with health systems, with payers, and all those things are really important. I think there's probably two themes that resonate most for me that we really spend the most time on. So the first is workforce. I think, again, to really be persistent about this, you know, many organizations are focused on care delivery innovation. That's it. That's, for me, that's kind of table stakes. The way care is delivered is going to evolve. The system, the industry is going to evolve. What I'm most focused on is how do we attract and engage a workforce of aligned, you know, clinicians and leaders that can deliver that service in whatever form really, really well, incredibly consistently and reliably, incredibly compassionately. And so workforce is probably the area where we are most focused on innovation. And that has technical or technology-based innovation. It has experience-based innovation. It has, you know, job design, benefits innovation, all these elements. But workforce is really the centerpiece of what I think is going to make it possible for us to make the Bay Auto Way come true. The other one that's interesting to me that we spend a lot of time thinking about is care transitions. I mean, you know, for anybody that's been hospitalized, getting home is really complicated. And if you're going directly home from a hospital, it's complicated. If you're making a stop along the way at a skilled nursing facility or other type of post-acute setting, it's really complicated. And navigating all the twists and turns to get safely home, independent and stable with the support that you need and the support that and coping to make it a meaningful experience that isn't scary and any more scary than it already is. Something we think a lot about. So how do we improve the care transitions experience is something, you know, and you all have written about our partnership with Prepared Health is a great example where we're trying to innovate and collaborate with strategic partners to make that transitional care experience way better.
Yeah. I'm interested about the innovation you mentioned when it comes to caregiving and delivering that care. I know some people are doing things like really leaning into partnerships with Uber and Lyft, while others are going an app or telehealth route. How are you guys trying to innovate when it comes to your workforce? Is there anything you can share?
I think all of those things are areas of innovation that we actively explore and test all the time and always have in some form or another. The one that I think maybe is not as obvious to people that I think is potentially disruptive is communication. You know, again, on the platform of focus of on workforce and people and talent, I think we have a distributed workforce. We have, you know, incredible people who are out in the homes of our patients every single day, working really autonomously. And how we create a sense of connectedness amongst those people and between those people and with those people is really, really important, not only because it helps create better patient care, they're more coordinated in how they're supporting a particular patient, but it also creates a better work experience. People like to be part of teams. They want to feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves. They want to be a part of a community of like-minded people doing great, meaningful work. And so we think about things like secure messaging, social sort of employee social networks, and even how we do mechanisms for bring them together, celebration, recognition, all these things around that are really the essence of workforce communication, engagement, and connectedness that I think might not be as obvious to people, but are probably some of our most important areas for innovation.
Yeah. You mentioned disruption. Obviously, this podcast is called Disrupt. What's your take on disruption in the home-based services industry today? For example, I know everybody has this idea to Uberize home healthcare. What's your take on that, and where does Bayada fit in?
I think that there's nothing disruptive about the human desire to be cared for in the place that they prefer most, which is at home. And I would offer that it's actually, you know, we have a responsibility to make that possible for people. And there are ways in which we can innovate that we can maybe disrupt how to do that well. But I see it as more evolutionary than revolutionary. You know, there's a lot of people out there and there's a lot of houses out there where these people reside, and disruption implies like total transformation overnight. I believe that the basic human desire to be cared for at home has not changed and will not change. And ultimately, the basics are what really matter. And clearly, innovation is important, but we're really focused on how do you bring together groups of people that can get inside a house, build a relationship of trust and compassion with a family, and make their life better. And if that's considered disruption in its like simplest raw form, then maybe so. But I think that's something that we really prioritize.
Awesome. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletter. You can do that at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Bailey Bryant, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network out of Chicago, Illinois.